Una y otra vez se les recordó que la misma gente a la que se le niega crédito, que está perdiendo sus empleos en empresas obligadas a suspender o abandonar operaciones por falta de crédito, se encuentran entre los contribuyentes que con sus impuestos están rescatando a esos bancos. Inició en Argentina el juicio contra el general retirado Jorge Olivera, juzgado por más de 100 secuestros y desapariciones durante la última dictadura militar. La información con Edgardo Esteban.
El juicio contra el ex general Jorge Olivera Robere, responsable de los centros clandestinos que funcionaron en la ciudad de Buenos Aires durante la última dictadura militar que gobernó Argentina en los años 70, comenzó con un escándalo. Luego de que el Tribunal Oral Federal número 5 prohibió a los medios autorizados a tomar imágenes del ex represor en la audiencia inaugural.
Liliana Macea, abogada querellante.
Esto tiene una autoría mediata en todos los crímenes que se cometieron en todos los centros clandestinos de la zona. Y por lo tanto aspiramos a que se lo condene a la pena máxima que establece el Código Penal.
El militar es juzgado por sus crímenes de lesa humanidad. Operaba junto al ex general Guillermo Suárez Meso. Es acusado de ser responsable directo de secuestrar, torturar y desaparecer a cientos de personas en aquellos días de horror y de muerte.
Tati Almeida, integrante de las Madres de Plaza de Mayo.
Otro día importantísimo. Yo considero que es histórico, ¿no es cierto? Porque te vuelvo a repetir, en el caso de madres ya no tenemos tiempo. Ya las cosas las queremos para ayer. Se nos están muriendo las madres y no pueden ver esa justicia que venimos hace tanto exigiendo.
El juicio se estima durará unos 6 meses y declararán en la causa más de 400 testigos. El militar retirado está imputado de 4 homicidios y 242 prisiones y torturas ilegales de personas que aún a pesar del tiempo se encuentran desaparecidas. Familiares de las víctimas exigieron en la puerta de la sede tribunalicia que se les permita a la prensa televisar y mostrar a la sociedad el rostro del ex dueño de la vida y la muerte en el pasado reciente, prohibido por el tribunal.
Giselle Deber, de la agrupación Hijos.
Parece que estos juicios tienen que ser difundidos de manera libre y completa, no parcialmente como lo permite el tribunal, entonces por eso vinimos a reclamar que les den el carácter histórico que tienen, permitiendo que sean difundidos.
Se prohibió a fotógrafos y camarógrafos cubrir el juicio en el interior del recinto. Las restricciones a la prensa son cuestionadas por querellantes, víctimas, organizaciones sociales, fiscales y hasta jueces. El tribunal es el mismo que prohíbe a las Madres de Plaza de Mayo ingresar con su tradicional pañuelo blanco. Edgardo Esteban, Telesur, Buenos Aires.
Organizaciones promigrantes de la ciudad de Los Ángeles, en California, planean protestar este domingo frente a las oficinas de la cadena de televisión ABC para exigir la cancelación del programa llamado Homeland Security, porque afirman proyecta una imagen negativa de las comunidades latinas y del Medio Oriente en Estados Unidos. De nuevo, Fernando Velázquez reporta.
El programa televisivo Homeland Security está generando problemas, inquietudes y preocupación entre grupos pro-inmigrantes. Este domingo, algunos planean alzar su voz y expresar su repudio al contenido de ese programa. Roy López es miembro de la coalición pro-inmigrante del sur de California.
Estamos opuestos al programa Homeland Security USA porque consideramos que el programa denigra a la comunidad latina, nos representa como los villanos a la historia y, bueno, presenta a los agentes del ICE, el Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, como los héroes de la historia, ¿no? Entonces, recordemos que estos son los mismos agentes responsables por las redadas en contra de la comunidad latina. Bueno, los responsables por el rompimiento de familias, ¿no? En el programa hemos visto que la mayoría de sospechosos, entre comillas, son latinos. En varios casos, esas personas son humilladas. Por ejemplo, en uno de los capítulos vimos una familia mexicoamericana. Esa familia intenta cruzar la frontera muy normalmente. De repente los agentes de inmigración los bajan de su camioneta a punta de pistola. Los niños de esa familia lloran asustados y no saben lo que pasa. En fin, humillan a la familia y al final resulta que, bueno, fue una identidad equivocada, ¿no? Entonces, ejemplos así, ¿no?, de cómo nos difaman y nos denigran. La protesta va a ser enfrente de ABC Studios en Burbank a las 3 de la tarde, a las 3:30 de la tarde, bueno, el domingo 15 de febrero, que es este domingo, Y bueno, se pueden comunicar conmigo si tienen alguna pregunta. Mi nombre es Roy López y a 626-827-8417.
En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica, un programa producido gracias a la colaboración de radios indígenas, comunitarias y libres de América y Europa. Nuestro agradecimiento a Más Voces de España, al diario La Jornada de México y a Telesur y a YBKE Mundial de Venezuela. A nombre de Rolando Solano y del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Coming up next, it's 5 minutes late, but you can blame the previous programmers. Bathrop Spears Broadsides with special in-studio guests Nina Zoran and the infamous Eric, as well as, of course, your host, Bathrop Spear Robert. Stay tuned. We're going to be examining the correspondence around the downtown ordinances, our ordinances, as some call them, the laws that criminalize homeless people. But actually, it's only about bad behavior. Stay tuned.
Young, having a care, I would climb any tree, take any dare. I was sent off to first grade, where I learned to prepare. Always living for someday, for something out there. I was told to be strong, taught how to win. Had tears were for losers and I never give in. Had to pledge my allegiance again and again. And that killing of a country was never a sin. I was given my chores to earn my next meal. Told what to think and how I should feel. I was ordered to stand, are conditioned and ill. And like a well-trained dog, I was brought under heel. And I danced, ooh, I danced. I cowed out and I bowed. I twirled and I pranced. Yes, I danced, ooh, I danced. Just a wandering victim of designed ignorance. From the bullies on the playground to the war left by France. From the great halls of Ivy to the walls of finance. From the senseless destruction of my environment to the natives held hostage on the Indian lands. And I danced through the muck I dance through the mire. I dance as though my immortal soul were on fire. I'll dance for the basics that this life requires, till my sentence of dance is finally expired. Your blood boil from a rage deep inside when you find out that the people you trusted had lied. Like so much baggage, they'll cast you aside and laugh at your fate for the strings that you tied to your own hands and feet as a puppet and a prize of the beast with the buttons in his station on high. When you thought you were simply just trying to survive, does it help you to know there's no place to hide? And you'll dance, yes, you'll dance like the whirling dervish lost in a trance. You'll dance, you'll dance through the sweat and the toil and the love and romance. And you'll dance through the muck and you'll dance through the mire. You'll dance as though your immortal soul were on fire. And you'll dance for the basics that this life requires, till your sentence of dance finally expired.
And that abruptly was the cessation of music from Jim Hindy from his album Shout Down the Wind, and the song was The Dance. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. This is Robert Norris. I'm talking to you from my, our underground studio here in Santa Cruz. You can reach us either by breaking down the door or by calling in at 427-3772. That's 427-FRSC. If you want to catch me off air, because what you have to say is too secret or too trivial to put on the air, you can call me at the Huff line, 423-4833. That's 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F. HUFF, of course, is also an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It's a group I work with, attempts to restore civil rights for the homeless. That and the Human Rights Organization meet twice weekly. HUFF meets on Wednesdays, 9:30 to 11:30 at the Sub Rosa Cafe. Check us out. Sub Rosa Cafe is on Pacific Avenue and Spruce Streets. We also meet at the Sub Rosa with the Human Rights Organization, a new meeting place, on Saturday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We're until 3:30 or 4. That's the next meeting coming up. So if you want to help restore civil rights for poor people in Santa Cruz after the latest debacle at City Council, you might want to come to those meetings, or you might want to volunteer by phone at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. So, what we've got here in the studio is a babbling lunatic named Zoran, his associate Nina, and we've turned off his mic. You can only hear him whispering in the background. So he will have to be gagged eventually, but until then, hang on. Back off, big boy. Also, we have with us Eric, who is, after being punched out by the police and bringing his story to the City Council members who we met with about a week ago at the West Side Cafe, who nodded at him politely and then did absolutely nothing else, as far as I'm aware. He has done some research on the issue of the downtown ordinances and the emails that came in both to the January 27th City Council meeting and the more recent one where there was a final meeting. So, what I'm doing here now is exercising guest control. I've beaten one of the guests into a submission. The other two are looking at me aghast.
Well,
and it's a guess. So, I'm going to begin, actually, we're going to do a variety of things on this show. I promised those who are interested in the no smoking issue, the smoking ban that's coming up. We have a homeless ban downtown. It's actually a kind of a homeless discouragement set of laws rather than ban, because it's illegal to ban people by category. So instead you make it very difficult for them based upon the fact they can't sit down anywhere legally, or at least it reduces the number of places where they can legally rest or roost, where they can perform, where they can socialize and so forth. And you also send in rangers to enforce laws in the park that ban smoking in the park, for example. There's an instance, since many homeless people do smoke. Or harass them for having their backpacks with them, even though it's legal to have your backpack with you. So we have a smoking ban law apparently coming up at City Council, the Santa Cruz City City Council, according to Genevieve Bookwalter, a rather bad reporter who did a very poor job of reporting on the downtown ordinances. I haven't yet gone through a point-by-point critique of her reporting, but I'd be happy to do that in the future. She wrote a story called Santa Cruz Considers Smoking Ban Downtown for today's Sentinel, and it reads as follows. City leaders could consider banning smoking downtown this spring as residents' complaints of cigarette smoke grow louder, and health experts say the ban serves the majority who don't light up. Smoking is bad for people's health, and in the public sector we should be doing our bit to discourage smoking, said City Councilman Don Lane, who is helping craft the ordinances the council would eventually consider. The ordinances would formalize existing rules banning smoking on city beaches and open space and would eliminate smoking in all parks. It's already been eliminated, I believe, in all parks. Fines or penalties for lighting up have not been worked out, said Councilmember Ryan Coonerty, who, along with Councilman Mike Rotkin, is working with Lane to draft the new rules. So that's Coonerty, Rotkin, and Don Lane. The smoking ban also would follows new ordinances finalized Tuesday, which Eric is going to be talking about, Tuesday evening, that cracked down on aggressive panhandling, public drunkenness, and bad behavior downtown. That's an example of bad reporting. They don't crack down on any of those three categories. They crack down on sitting down on the sidewalk, peaceful panhandling, political tabling, and street performing, and they also put a one-hour limit on benches and make any three infractions a misdemeanor. That's what the ordinances do, but there's no indication from that in her stories, either this particular story where she refers to it in passing, or the stories that she wrote about the actual ordinance passages themselves. We've heard, again, continuing with her story about the smoking ban, a lot of community members who are tired of smoke being blown in their faces, Coonerty said. The issue has grown especially important, Coonerty said, after the American Lung Association of California last year gave Santa Cruz City and County a D grade for efforts to control tobacco smoke in public places. That grade came despite a community assessment project report that showed 90% of county residents do not smoke. On Pacific Avenue, though, not everyone took well to the news. Now, I suppose you might say 90% of the community is also disabled. Does that mean there should be no facilities for disabled people? Actually, they're required. So it's an interesting phenomenon. Of course, you could say, well, smoking is voluntary, yes, but it's also an addiction. I think they're starting to go too far. I think not smoking inside is good, but outside, said Lynn Wood, 62, of Santa Cruz, as she sat on a bench and puffed on a Pall Mall menthol light. Of course, one wonders if she was there for more than an hour or not. That's a good question. Her friend Mark Lee, 39, of Santa Cruz, smoked a hand-rolled cigarette, asked why cars can spew exhaust on Pacific Avenue, but cigarettes could become illegal. It's just getting a little ridiculous, Lee said. Lane said he hopes city residents speak up now as the new rules are being drafted. He stressed the city will not ban smoking everywhere, and smokers should have some places left where they can inhale. Just like people will have some small, select, so-called opportunity zones where they can sit, peacefully spare change, perform, and politically table all crammed together along Pacific Avenue. But, of course, no other places are open for these activities on the sidewalk on any other street in Santa Cruz that's adjacent to a business. So it's interesting that we didn't hear about any of that, either from Genevieve Bookwalter of the Santa Cruz Sentinel or from Mike Rotkin, the Santa Cruz City Council, or from anybody on the City Council, in fact, including Don Lane, who we requested raise these issues and did at the first session on January 27th, the first city council session, raise a few of them, but then voted along with the rest of the herd for this set of behavioral laws that were not really referred to by Genevieve Bookwalter, but mischaracterized as dealing with public drunkenness, bad behavior, and so forth. So there's actually 208 comments on the Sentinel website about this issue, and if I get any phone calls from people about it, I'll start talking about it. I've suggested people can call in if they want, and if they do, we'll talk about it. We're also going to be considering the implications of the proposed smoking ban with the aggressive discouragement of homeless people downtown and the aggressive support for bad behavior by the Santa Cruz Police Department, Parks, Rec, and Rangers, Parks and Rec Rangers, and also the hosts, or the pests, as I call them, the eyes and ears of the Santa Cruz Police Department. So, let me introduce my guests. You will try to restrain your associate there, Nina, with the appropriate amount of, I don't know, sexual enticement, emotional support, whatever is necessary to stop him from wailing at the moon in our studio. I'd like to introduce. So we have Eric. Hi, Eric. How's it going?
Hi, Robert.
And we have Nina. Hi, Nina.
Robert, hi.
And, of course, we have the ineffable and unquenchable Zoran. Say hello, Zoran.
I want you I met the mayor today.
Oh, good. Well, as long as you... The mayor is... If you're probably one of the few people in town who would make that particular characterization, except perhaps her immediate family and loved ones, but maybe not. Hard to say.
She's still beautiful to me, like flowers in the rain.
All right. Well, Cynthia Matthews, you have a new admirer here in the Free Radio Santa Cruz studios.
I cried over the homeless thing.
All right. Moving right along. Eric, you have been doing some research around the clock. I'm tired even thinking about it, reading through the many pages of emails that came in to the Santa Cruz City Council staff on January and for the January 27th hearing and the February 10th hearings, which gave us the worsened downtown ordinances. Am I right on that?
I haven't even gotten to February 10th. I've had enough material just going through January 27th. I'm astonished at the oozing hypocrisy of these people.
Well, maybe I should. You yourself wanted to make a presentation. Why don't I kind of turn things over to you for a bit and remind people that the call-in number here is 427-3772 if you'd like to call in. And maybe you have some thoughts about any of this. And if you do, callers often get priority unless I'm feeling cranky. And I am feeling cranky, but I'll try to control my crankiness. Perhaps go ahead, Eric. Take it away. What have you found? How do you want to begin?
Well, I'd like to start off with a... Well, perhaps you'll. I'll just let you people judge for yourselves as to the tone, this sort of Orwellian, sort of scary tone of this letter that is attached to the City Council minutes from January 27th. I'd like to just read this. It's not very long, and I'll let it speak for itself. This is from Jennifer Green, who is the chair of the Social and Legislative Committee. That's the Social and Legislative Committee of the Downtown Association, which itself sounds kind of scary. It reads as follows. It says, "Dear Mayor, the Social and Legislative Committee of the Downtown Association has been engaged in studying issues of social behavior downtown, including panhandling. Experts from social services, homeless resources, the police department, and the United Way have spoken at our meetings, and to a person have agreed that panhandling does more to perpetuate poverty than to ease it, because the time spent panhandling precludes time that may be meaningfully spent working on things like housing, employment, obtaining services, or addressing substance abuse issues. The Downtown Association would like to embark on a program of real change, not spare change, to try and educate the public about these issues and institute ways the public generosity can be funneled to homeless service providers to assist the disenfranchised." I'll just let that speak for itself. There's some pretty scary language in there.
Let me give you a reaction, can I, Eric? This old chestnut, real change, not spare change. What it is a it's a description of a program that they tried in the mid 90s, and they called it give a hand up, not a hand out, in the late 80s. Essentially, it's a merchant saying, these panhandlers discourage our customers and make us nervous, so let's get rid of them, but not seem to be really cruel, so we'll give out, well, instead we'll encourage people to donate money to social services, shelter programs, and so forth. And while I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing to give out money to food programs and shelter services and so forth, I don't think that generally those things can be effectively handled by the private sector. I think they require a lot more assistance and tax support than that. But there have been some real contributions made by the private sector, and I'm glad that when people private charity is a fine thing. There's nothing wrong with private charity. I think it's great.
No objection there.
But the issue is this claim that panhandling per se, which is essentially the free speech activity of saying, wow, buddy, can you spare a dime? Which is, it's sort of the subject of a classic song from the early 30s, which I think I'll play later in the show. The notion that you want to prohibit this or severely restrict it, as it's prohibited in most of Santa Cruz, it's prohibited anywhere in Santa Cruz at night. It's illegal to ask your friend for a dime. And people have actually been ticketed for it. It's illegal to come within 3 feet of a person and ask them for a dime, even if you know them. It's illegal to do it sitting on any public property, even though that's not enforced. It's still on the law books. And it's illegal to ask someone in any of the many forbidden zones, since there's a 14-foot forbidden corridor all along Pacific Avenue and a 14-foot corridor along all the other sidewalks of the town. And since they're only 10 feet wide, that means there's a forbidden corridor 4 feet out into the street. And since you're not allowed to walk into the street and panhandle anyway, since it's illegal to panhandle toward a vehicle, you're in a position where not only are you not allowed to panhandle within 14 feet of a building, but people that you panhandle and attempt to solicit, say, can you spare a dime, either with a sign or verbally, cannot be in that corridor either. That's also technically illegal in Santa Cruz. We have the worst ordinance, probably in the state, for panhandling. Badly written. Some of it is not enforced because it's unconstitutional. That means essentially no panhandling, which has been found. You can't do that. I mean, you can restrict the time, place, and manner of panhandling, but you cannot ban panhandling as they tried to do in various cities unsuccessfully in the late 80s and early 90s. And it's good that you can't. I mean, even though panhandling is a nuisance, even though panhandling is annoying, it's a sign of the times, it's a right people have, and it's a necessity for a lot of people.
It really just boils down to one person asking another person for help.
Right. So.
And getting it or obtruding them.
I would be happy to talk to people about abusive panhandling, which the current panhandling law in Santa Cruz really has very little to do with. There are a few sections which talk about following a person or using abusive language with a person, which, goes into the abusive area, which I think it's relevant to consider. But most of it has to do with you can't do it at night, you can't do it in all these forbidden zones, you can't do it in a group of two, you can't do it from a seated position. All of these behaviors per se are not criminal, but they've been made criminal. So now people have been given citations for all this behavior, and now those citations are going to become not just infraction crimes, but misdemeanors, punishable by up to 6 months and a year in jail under the new Coonerty Council, I should say, Matthews Council laws. The issue you raise, and I've kind of wandered around a bit here, but the issue that is raised by Jennifer, I'm not sure what her last name is, of the Downtown Association.
Jennifer Green.
I'm not aware that I think the Social and Legislative Committee may indeed have open meetings, but they didn't advertise and tell people that they were going to be talking about these issues. I'm not aware that they invited any homeless people or any advocates. I certainly wasn't informed, and I know that the executive director of the Downtown Association, Chip, and he's been very friendly. He's called up. He's invited me to chat with him about these issues. He just didn't bother to tell me when they were actually discussing these substantive issues at their own Downtown Association meetings. Nor did I think he inform anybody at the Homeless Services Center, at least I haven't heard that he has, or anybody at the Community Action Board, or anybody at the Homeless Persons Health Project. While it may be true that a person who is out there on the street seeking money is not actively involved in some, may actually also be actively involved in a program of, you know, drug rehabilitation or something. The idea that that somehow takes away from these other programs, to me, is not necessarily true at all. And that's almost say, well, if they spend their money on drugs, then perhaps that's true. Yeah, that certainly is true. But the idea that there's been some scientific survey made about how money is spent from panhandling, I've never seen such a survey. Now, maybe it has. Maybe Jennifer has seen it. But she's quoting from police and merchants whose real interest has nothing to do with the best interests of the people on the street, in my view, but rather with a narrow view of what the economic
these people want to
is.
Turn Santa Cruz into, and a lot of them just come straight out and say it. They want to turn Santa Cruz into Los Gatos or Carmel. You know, if that's what we want, if we want another Carmel or another Los Gatos, then, you know, where's Santa Cruz going to go?
All right, we've got a caller. Maybe we'll get a different view from this caller here.
I love Bohemia.
Yes.
Santa Cruz.
All right, we have a caller here, and let's see if we can actually get you on the air. Hey there, caller.
Hi, my name's David.
Hey, David, how you doing?
Hi, I've been listening to your show, and I just thought it was interesting.
David?
Some of the mental health and substance abuse programs seem to have been closing recently in Santa Cruz, so it's harder for people to use their time productively to go to do those things.
So can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, I mean, the Opal Cliffs residence is closing down and sending people out, and the Pioneer House drug abuse program closed down. So, I mean, what has recently been happening with these downtown ordinances is that people are going to be encouraged to go into a drug abuse rehab program like the Pioneer House one, but it won't exist.
Right.
So it just seems a little bit strange.
I mean, it's sort of similar to me, caller David, to the idea that back in 1988, 20 years ago, when we were trying to get the sleeping ban lifted only slightly, we wanted the police to warn first and only before they ticketed people in vehicles who use their vehicles as their home. The mayor at that time, Marty Wormhout, and Mike Rotkin, I think, was on the council, too, was saying, well, we give out little cards to people that instead talk about the shelter spaces. There were 2 shelter spaces for homeless people and 12, I think, for people who were given mental ill designations at that time in the River Street shelter at night. So you have this fantasy of there being adequate services. I mean,
right.
And so I think your point is well
as
taken.
Well, David, if I can say as the mentally ill advocate here, don't you think that the Opal Cliffs has a fine mansion out there? What do you propose for the mentally ill in that type of setting?
What do I propose personally? I propose keeping it open. I'm sure that there can be found a budget arrangement to make sure that there is something available for people who
private donors
are in a state of cognition where they're not adequately finding housing on their own.
You know, my view has always been, and Eric wants to say something too, is that, you know, that you often hear this denunciation that, I don't know, Pat Brown or Ronald Reagan closed the mental health hospitals back in the 50s and 60s and 70s. But, you know, the reality is that a lot of those places were snake pits and, you know, and forced drugging deals. But what they should have done was allowed them to stay open as housing alternatives for people. And that's really what was needed. Optional places, not voluntary places of forced confinement. Eric has something he wants to add. Is that it, David? Do you want to stay on the line?
Oh, no, that's fine.
All right. Thanks for calling in. Call in again if you want.
Well, if Eric would like to ask me a question, I'd be happy
okay,
to
sure,
talk about
another
a
question.
Second.
I just wanted to echo the sentiment that, you know, as I've been going through these emails and letters to the city council from all of these people, I get the impression that people think that there are all these services out there for the homeless and the poor, and I just don't see it. We have River Street Shelter was mentioned, which has, I think, 35 beds. And I recall in the 1990 census, many years ago, that there was an estimated 3,000 homeless people. That was almost 20 years ago. 3,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz County. So you do the math. That's, one in 100 people or something like that?
I think that's about right. 30 times 100 should be about 3,000.
Home, I suppose, to 3 to 5.
Oh, well, thank you, David.
Sure, you're welcome.
David, yeah. Pleasure.
So, I mean, I think your point is well taken. But, I mean, really, I think the real irresponsibility of a city council that allows a mob of merchants and residents not so much to push these worsening changes in the law, and they are worsening changes, but to essentially ratify the existing enforcement practices which the police are using downtown, and to ignore the fact that their shelter, I mean, the shelter, the emergency shelter situation really kind of tells the story. Their shelter tonight for maybe 200 people walk-in emergency shelter, and there are 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people out there in the city limits, not the county where there's thousands of homeless people, but in the city limits. So you have 85 or 90% of the population of the people are unsheltered out there. And that figure is ignored by the city council, but they also didn't go into the different programs that what programs exist. They could have itemized, they could have put on the wall, we have the following spots in each of the programs. I saw no such presentation by the city council that showed any of this. And of course, the reason they didn't, they would, they might have said that they didn't do that was because they claimed this had nothing to do with the homeless. It's all about bad behavior. That was the shifting of the focus. But bad behavior is not what it was about at all. It's what the residents were concerned about. It's what the businesses, and I'm sure they were, concerned about as well. But that's not what the laws talked about.
I think the bad behaviors that they're talking about, there's already laws against those things anyway. You know, if you lay your hands on somebody, a passerby, that's, you know, that's assault. If you, you spit on a passerby, you know, there's laws against that stuff already. But what strikes me when as I'm reading through these emails, too, is that everybody seems to, they fall back on this standby solution to the problem, which is always stiffening up enforcement, the police and the courts. The police and the laws and the courts are always the solution to the problem. And, you know, if any of you have spent any time in downtown Santa Cruz recently, I think you'd agree that we're virtually so in a beautiful police state down there. And I'd like to see any evidence that more police and more enforcement and more laws is going to alleviate any of these problems.
I mean, you would think that since these laws were actually, that the forbidden zones were more than doubled in 2002. They were put into place in 1994 as a 6-foot corridor. Then they were extended to 14 feet, more than double, in 2002. And additional areas were made forbidden. You would be able to look at the stats and see a reduction in bad behavior. But the police presented no evidence either that that happened or that even in 2002 when they presented these ordinances, there were two council members who opposed them at that time, council members Crone and Sugar. They asked the police, please show us the statistics that show that throughout the 90s, these laws you put in have had a positive effect. Police presented no such figures. And they didn't do it again this time. And they didn't do it for the parking lot panic law, the law that makes it illegal to park, you know, to sit in your vehicle
hang
for more than
in parking lots.
Well, to sit in your car and read a book.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a vehicle there, that's illegal and under the existing Coonerty law.
Loitering.
Right. Although loitering laws are supposed to be unconstitutional. You want to say something there, Zoran?
Yeah, well, the panhandling and then I suppose the aggressive behavior or downtown ordinances. I just suppose that the 60s remind me of not vagrancy, but kind of a way of flower power associates or being there, you know. And I don't think we should take being there away from Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz is a beautiful island of dance and song, and it's a renaissance of behaviors that you need to express. There are the mentally ill. We need them. The homeless are wonderful additions. If we know how to treat them and love them, then what can't we do with the world? I mean, it's just incredible.
We love you,
what
Theo.
We
love you. And that's right. You know, another thing, and I've learned a lot from reading through these letters and emails. And another thing that I pick up on is that, okay, people talk about, there's a lot of mention about other cities in California that have been through similar, you know, situations, and they've passed these laws, like I mentioned Carmel and Los Gatos. People mentioned San Luis Obispo and other towns like that, other coastal towns. And they just openly admit that, these towns passed these laws, and what happened? Oh, they came here. They came to Santa Cruz. They kicked all the homeless and all the poor and all of the undesirables out of those towns, and now they're here.
Well, I mean, I suppose that's an argument for saying, see, we can pass those laws, too, and kick everybody out and send them on their way. It's kind of, I really see it as a direct, a sort of direct parallel to Oki laws or
sunset towns that didn't allow blacks in town after sunset. Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of them that we don't hear about. That's kind of a hidden part of the history of the U.S. What else did you find in the you had a lot of you said you really had a long presentation you wanted to make, Eric. Is there more that you wanted to bring up in terms of terms of quotes you found?
I've got a lot of direct quotes that I have put here in my computer. Random quotes selected out of these emails and letters to the city council, just to give you all an idea of the kind of mentality that we're dealing with here, that what these people are saying, it's shocking to me. It's really been an eye opener to read, the kind of mentality that what we're dealing with.
Well, for example.
Well, I have a lot of them. So,
Begin with the choicest cuts, so to speak.
Well, I don't. Unfortunately, I haven't had time.
I'm sorry, too late. We have a caller here. Let's see what the caller says. Hi, you're on Free Radio. You were on Free Radio. Perhaps you can try again. 427-3772 is the call-in. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM or freakradio.org. In the studio with me is the peripatetic and voluble Zoran, the soft-spoken
Nina, here.
And
half of me is
the
in Spain.
Studious Eric. Eric, I know that you feel like you perhaps want more time to prepare on this issue. So
I do have a lot of these quotes, and they're not in any particular order.
Right. Well, you might want. I mean, you should feel free to either pick out a few select ones, and maybe you can take him outside while you're doing it. Hang on, we have a caller here. I hope we have a caller. Hi, it's Free Radio, and who are we talking to?
Drummer Dave, man.
Hey, Drummer Dave. You're distorting, so put your mouth a little bit away from the phone.
Love you, Dave.
Drummer Dave.
So Drummer Dave, what you got for us?
Hey, good evening. Hey, man, I was thinking he needed a word called, ultra-fascism.
Yes.
That's what I'm thinking. Fascism. Or, what's the other word for it?
Can I be a part of your punk band, Dave?
Let's consider the word, I will be the devil's advocate. I'll be the Matthews advocate here, the merchant advocate. All right, Drummer Dave, fascism is asking people to behave reasonably downtown, not to abuse other people as they walk by, not to have a person who's a working person have to pass 16 people asking for spare change on the streets, have to have other people, people have facing crowds of rather intimidating seeming young people blocking the sidewalk. I mean, what is wrong with having police, in essence, tell people to act a little more reasonably downtown? That's the argument that the merchants make.
Right.
What do you say there, Drummer Dave? You got any answer for that?
Oh, I've been downtown plenty of times, and there's been plenty of crowds, and there's been plenty of people, and there's been plenty of creativity, and there's been plenty of beautiful things happening all over the place, and they should just stop and look around themselves and question their beginnings and definitely
now wait a minute, Dave, are you saying that you haven't been harassed downtown by anyone ever?
Oh, by far I've been harassed, yes. And near and far.
Well, I'm not talking about the boys in blue or the hosts. I'm talking about panhandlers and drunks and, I don't know, meth heads and guys.
I can't say that's ever happened. If his guy's drunk, he's probably to himself, and he just leaves everything alone.
Well, it may be that, you don't look like a tourist, and maybe, maybe you have some sort of more simpatico relation with these people than, but for your average, person visiting town, for your average tourist going through town, or for your average...
Oh, I find the tourist quite, dramatic sometimes.
Well, what I'm saying is that you may not be targeted by the panhandlers because they may know you're not the wealthiest guy in the world. You're a kind of a... you're dressed informally, very informally, as far as I can see. And also, many of the people on the avenue, so there's a different kind of attitude. Whereas those who aren't
streetwise.
What's that?
Streetwise would be a good.
Right. Well, the point is that
me.
If
If you're trying to deal with the... See, I asked Eric this question. I'm going to ask him now. Is there something more you want to say, Dave, before I...
Oh, just, hey, Rob, man, love your show, and I just hope they never come and get your stuff, and, man, right on.
I want to just ask you, Dave, were you drumming yesterday at the drum circle?
Oh, yeah, in the rain, soaking wet, and the people...
Drumming in the rain, wow. And how did that go?
Well, there were people that wanted to join that were in an alcove trying to stay dry, and the police showed up and got them to all leave that alcove.
And this was downtown?
Yes. So they didn't want that happening in a public space.
Where did you attempt to do this drum circle yesterday?
In the rain.
Right, where? In the rain. Where?
Yes,
where?
I'm
sorry, I can't hear you.
At parking lot 4, we were in the rain.
And so you were allowed to be in parking lot number 4, or you weren't allowed to be?
Police didn't want to get wet.
So it was only when you moved to the alcove of where that you were driven away?
Oh, it was a group of people that wanted to attend the circle from across the parking lot and listen to the music, and they were asked to leave.
I'm sorry, can you describe how that happened? I don't have a picture of what went down.
Well, the alcove was... in the building that the college owns, right next to Logos.
Right, that's the alcove that faces parking lot number 4.
That's correct. And they were all asked to disperse and get wet by the police.
How many people were driven into the rain by the police?
Right.
How many people were driven into the rain by the police?
I would say at least 10, if not 12 or 15.
Were they blocking the entranceway?
They were blocking nothing.
Were they creating excessive noise that was complained about by the people in the building?
I don't think so.
Did they assault passersby as they walked to the farmer's market?
I don't think so. I think they were all just trying to stay dry.
Perhaps they were consuming illegal drugs or engaging in questionable smoking behavior.
Nope. Didn't look like anything.
Wait a minute. Maybe they were aggressively panhandling inappropriately.
Next to a market? I doubt it.
Well, wait a minute. How about the possibility that they were... lingering in a parking lot for more than 15 minutes without parking or retrieving a vehicle? Aha! Illegal behavior, okay? Case closed. Thank you, Dave.
I think it was selective enforcement.
I'm sorry, we don't want to hear any more. Actually, do you have anything else you want to say? Yeah, I guess we got rid of him. All right, so as you can see, crime waves are rampant downtown. Luckily, the police are dealing with the drumming crime wave by dealing with... I'm not quite sure what law they would even use to drive people away from the alcove of the building. That's interesting. And this really goes to whether people will respond to this kind of shit and say, hold it, show me your law before I move.
Yeah.
We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio. What's your name, caller?
Hello.
What's your name, caller?
Donna.
Hey, Donna, I recognize you. Have you turned down your radio? Because if you don't, it's bad news.
Could you turn down the radio, please?
Yeah, otherwise you'll be listening to the echo.
Yeah, sorry about that.
All right, so Donna, what's shaken?
Well, I got a certified letter from the police department signed by Patty Cipone, chief of police.
She's a vice chief or something, but go ahead.
Okay, exonerating Lamas of unnecessary force and the other charges I made against him.
Uh-huh, okay. And this, of course, was because you filed a complaint with the Professional Standards Unit or the Internal Affairs of the Police Department about an assault that happened last May where you had your arm broken by Sergeant Lamas, right?
Right.
Wow.
And he admitted doing it, and they're not even paying the minimum on my hospital admittance or anything like that.
Now, are you still facing the charge of resisting arrest?
Yes.
Okay, and what's your next
very
court?
Very similar to my situation.
Yeah, Erica, too, is facing, in the studio,
is
facing a charge of resisting arrest, or perhaps assaulting a police officer. I'm not sure which. If you look at the code section?
I'm being charged with attempting to grab the officer's gun.
Wow. Okay, well, you know, it's...
Which I did not do.
Such a shiny, pretty gun, you know, you never can tell. So Donna, what's your next court date, and where is your...
I don't know what it's going to be. I sent an email to Ben Rice yesterday, and to Becky, so...
Okay. I know that I did get a lengthy call from Ben Rice. He left me a long message, like, about a month ago, which left me further confused, because first I had heard that you had were being offered some kind of settlement to drop the whole thing because the police were getting nervous that, you know, with only Sergeant Lamas's story, only there were no other police officers there and there were five or six other witnesses, that he had any justifiable probable cause or even reasonable suspicion for breaking your arm. You know,
wow,
it's hard to, it's hard to think that maybe they want to back off. Then I heard from Ben later that, oh, no, you weren't being offered that at all, that it was simply that if you, that you had, you should probably do a deal because you might face penalties, and that you couldn't really get a civil settlement unless you won your criminal case, which wasn't necessarily a slam dunk. Then I heard most recently, no, there was a so-called Pitches motion hearing prepared for. A Pitches motion hearing is where they ask the officer to present, or the police department to present, all the old complaints against the officer. You actually don't get to read the complaints. I think maybe you do, but at least you get the name and address of each person who's made a, filed the complaint, such as you just did, or you did some months ago with respect to Sergeant Lamas. And then those people can be contacted by the defense team to challenge the credibility of the officer or show perhaps a pattern of excessive force or, shall we say, lack of truthfulness. And that so-called Pitches hearing was postponed, as I understand it, according to what Rice said on the message, because the police or the DA was nervous about this, you know, exposing this kind of information. But I'm really not clear as to what's happening. So as soon as you find out what's going on, I'd like to, you know, to know.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm the one that gets to make the decision, I'm not backing down.
Well, that's
good for you.
Yeah, that's good news.
They tried to cut off my check, too, so, you know, my government.
Well, I know you also have talked about there being harassment up at the Three Trees lot where you were initially assaulted out near Lighthouse Field by Sergeant Lamas. So what's been happening up there?
Well, the rangers have come in when there's a crowd of hippies comes through from out of town, like four or five ranger cars. This is how your tax money is being spent, folks. Came out three times one day just to check out a hippie bus in San Francisco. And, of course, they have their suspicions. There's somebody out, and they have to check everybody at Three Tree Lot, not any other lot, you hear. And then I heard the police a couple of weeks ago went window to window asking people why they were parking there.
Are you still parking there, or have you been driven away?
I was there today.
And were there any, was there any police or ranger harassment?
No, but I was just there for a few hours. But, and then they're closing all the Lighthouse Field parks at sunset now.
Instead of?
9 p.m.
Now, this is a state park decision or a city park decision?
State park decision.
And these rangers, these rangers that are moving around, are they state rangers or city rangers?
State rangers.
Right, so this is actually a different jurisdiction than, let's say, John Wallace's rangers, who's, who you've had a lot of problems with in the past, right?
Well, I just had one problem with him, yes.
Well, I know that he's... others have had problems with him. I beg your pardon, then, because I know I've heard a lot about Wallace from different people, and he and I have had our significant disagreements. You also talked about having some problems at 24-hour fitness, the... physical, you know.
The police came through there, and I was getting out of my RV to go to the gym. So I just, when he knocked on the door, I just went out and said, I'm going to the gym. Here's my membership, because there's people that have camped at that lot for years, okay, but they can't get rid of them. There's, like, some problem with the lease or something, but anyway, two cops were walking through, and they said they smelled marijuana smoke, and I had to show them my Medican card.
Ooh, marijuana smoke.
And then
smoke.
My friends that were with me, they fronted their ID, but they managed to deflect them.
Smoking is so liberal.
From having to show their ID, and they got another call, so that took them out of there.
I'm not sure I understand what you're talking about, Donna. Can you be a little more clear? What... police are trying to get rid of what people, and what are they? Are they people in vehicles? Are they people hanging out? This is a private parking lot, a 24-hour sort of a gym area, right?
Right. Well, they say they're not really responsible for it. And
Who's they? Who are you talking
about? 24-hour fitness.
The business itself that owns the property says what?
This old man owns it, and he comes around now and then, tries to get this guy out of there, and he can't get him out of there.
So
they use some excuse.
I'm sorry. Who is trying to get the old man out of there? And the old man is a client at 24 Hour Fitness or just a?
The old man owns, supposedly said he owns the lot.
Right.
I met him once.
And who wants to get rid of him?
He wants to get rid of the guy that's parked there for years.
And the guy that's parked there for years, what's his status? Is he a member of 24 Hour Fitness?
He's terminally ill, and he has no place to go, and he's just going to stay there.
Is he a member of 24 Hour Fitness, or is he just simply a member of the public?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Okay, but you're saying that they've been trying to get rid of somebody who may or may not be a paying customer there parked in the lot and not been able to do so, or? It seems to me that's very simple. You just file a trespass complaint against somebody, you know, if it's on private property.
Yeah.
So I don't quite understand what that would
be. Well, I've just been going to the gym a lot because my arm and my hip have been bothering me a lot. I still have a lot of strength to go in my arm and flexibility.
Can I say, Robert,
just spending more time there, and then I have a friend with me to, you know.
No. Nina's arm is still hurting from an incident with the police.
So they have to, think quick to get the police not to demand their identification, which they have no right to do anyway, and I'm really sick of it happening. I'm so sick of it happening to people.
So wait a minute, you're saying that? Hold it. I want to understand this, Donna. You have been ID'd by the police in this lot, even though you're a member of 24 Hour Fitness. You've been stopped by the police.
I was, yeah, Saturday.
And what is your reaction when they do this? What do you say to them?
I said, I'm a member of 24 Hour Fitness. I grab my bag and I walk out and be careful to lock and close the door behind me.
And what do the police say?
Walk away.
What do the police do?
They come out.
This officer tried to put his arm on me and I had to scream because I said, I threw his arm off. I said, don't touch me. He was like probably thinking he was doing a nice favor to me or something, which I can't imagine any cop thinking that patting a woman on the back is doing her a favor.
Well, plus you have also had a bad experience with the last time an officer laid hands on you, that he broke your arm, right?
Exactly.
Sergeant Christian Lamas last May.
So he didn't like us because we wouldn't give our identification and we wouldn't, act all scared or whatever it is that they wanted. We're just curious. Curious.
Well, the answer to that is, let me give you a couple suggestions for the next time this happens. I mean, what you did sounds fine, although you may then, suffer another broken arm if they decide they want to get heavy-handed. One thing you can do, and I know Zoran wants to say something.
I'm not staying there now.
Right, but I mean, if and when if you're using 24 Hour Fitness, you should have the right to go back there and use it and park there, and as long as you're using it. But,
I'd probably have to park in the front lot,
My suggestion, though, is that if you are approached by a police officer in that regard, you say to the officer, am I free to go? Which is kind of the code word for, do you have any reasonable suspicion or for detaining me or probable cause for arresting me? You don't say that. That's what it means. And if the cop has anything but no, then you turn and continue to walk on. Also, it's nice to have a tape recorder on you, and this happens in a couple of witnesses. Zoran has something he wants to say. He keeps kind of mumbling in like some sort of ghost from the 50s. What is it you want to say, Zoran, here? Go ahead.
Oh, Rockefeller Files. No, yeah, Donna, we're very well. I've studied a bit and heard hearsay on your case. Me with the police personally, I worship the fact that they do have powers that are very advanced with mind and soul. I'm very against the atrocities that are abrasive and forthright, as you may know. It's not what I would say is entrapment, more to hearsay, but something that powerfully puts you in the mood of, why are they doing this to me, and how can I stop it?
I know, Zoran, you were saying earlier that, and Donna, you might be interested in this, that Nina, you yourself had some bad experience with the police involving some violence in Santa Cruz. Is that right?
Yeah.
Come closer to the mic.
It was just very surprising. I was trying to keep things peaceful and keep myself basically from being taken anywhere but going home. And no matter what happened, I found myself engaged in a situation where I was pulled very strongly on my arm and pulled down, which had hurt me for many months.
It
was pretty shocking.
Where and when was this?
Oh, this was back in June. on the east side, Thurber Lane.
It was intense for me, Donna. I spent time away in the cat box for that.
Did you? Did I want to hear about that, Zoran, but did you face charges for this?
I had faced them, and I stood my ground also.
And did you? Were you convicted of anything, or did you plead?
No. Yeah.
What were you charged with?
Well, trespassing, resisting arrest.
So you got the same charge that Donna, our caller, has gotten, and that Eric, on our other guest, actually, you got a more serious charge.
And she had a bottle of wine. Grab a gun. They siped it up as though it was she's going to use this against a 2-foot cop or what, a 20-foot cop about, having a bottle of wine. It was unopened. They were after me because in 7-Eleven there were some intensities. I feel just a psychiatric patient, kind of gone from Dominican for a while without his medications.
Right. I know that you have had your issues, Zoran, with Dominican, and you obviously are a man who has a wholly different method of self-presentation in the studio than many other people here. In a way, refreshing and another frightening.
Well, the difficult thing for me was not only the pain of getting hurt, which I was totally innocent thereof, but then the shock of going into holding cell there.
The rude awakening.
Which caused me great trepidation, where I felt my heart pounding, where I thought it was going to come out of my chest.
UFOs.
And I didn't understand the reason for all of that. And it was an unfortunate thing. It hurt me for many months. And I would hate to see this or anyone else go through this. That's all I know.
Well, these aren't isolated. These aren't isolated situations anymore. This seems to be happening more and more and more. Once you're awake to what's going on, you see that it's happening everywhere. Of course, we've all heard about the incident in the Oakland BART station where a policeman killed a young black man on camera.
Oscar Grant. Yeah, Christ. Heard about that. Donna, anything more to report and anything you've seen that you wish to pass on to the community at this point?
Me feel for you, Donna.
Donna? Sounds like we lost her.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So phone lines are open, 427-3772. You're tuned to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. Again, the call-in number, 427-3772. Under discussion, a number of things. Eric's about to say something, but we're talking about issues ranging from the proposed smoking ban downtown, the passage of the downtown ordinances, police violence in Santa Cruz, and how to address that. And the issue, frankly, because I'm trying to give a nod to people who are concerned about bad behavior downtown by, folks on the street, how to really address that problem in a way that doesn't criminalize people. Mm-hmm. Eric, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to, it kind of follows from what the caller was talking about. I just wanted to express the feelings, what it feels like, what it does to you when you're violated by the police. I was punched in the face by police. It was a complete surprise.
In front of me.
And you find once this happens, it happens to you. And the whole twisted system is coming after you. I've been attacked, and now I'm on trial because I've been attacked.
And again, I want to caution you. I had an interview with you described your case to Don Lane or Catherine Byers, I think it was actually councilwoman, and I stopped the tape because I wanted to make sure that your defense attorney heard, you've been advised fully of the consequences of making a public statement like this.
I'm not worried about it. The truth is the truth. That's the way I see it.
Well, the truth is the truth, but you remember, you can present the truth through a second party in a way that does not compromise your case in front of a jury. So, for example, you can say exactly the same thing you're saying by having a second person say it and say, this is the account I heard.
Yeah.
And that will make you mean that they can't call that account in front of a jury and tear it apart, show contradictions. And the point here is not to conceal the truth. The point is that the resources of the district attorney's office are considerably more than those
than
of
the
public defender's
yes.
office. And the police department
has
a heavy interest in maintaining its reputation and protecting its officers from lawsuits. Mm. And the fact of the matter is...
Well, that's what I was getting at, is like, when this happens to you, all of a sudden you realize that it's you alone against this enormous power of the government, of the police, of the DA, of the laws, and it's you all by yourself. You don't have, you know, you don't, even your own friends, even my own friends, you know, say things to me like, you know, perhaps you should have done something differently, you know, and...
Get a psychiatry program with the police, yeah, that they worship.
I'm just trying to communicate to the audience what it's like to be up against this enormous power of these people. They have the power to take away your life. Going to jail is taking away your life. Jail is, prison jail is the worst thing that you can do to a person. Putting you in a cell, taking you away from your friends, like your community. And to have that hanging over my head, I have to tell you, Robert, my stress level over the past couple of weeks since this incident has happened, you know, is just so much higher. You know, it's not good for my health.
Imagine my lessons.
And there's no guarantee. I mean, I could do jail time for this.
Ben.
And yeah, it's me against all of them, and that's what I'm trying to communicate.
Let's see what this caller has to say here.
Thank you,
hi, you're on Free Radio with the gang. What's your name, caller?
This is Aloni Spirit.
Hey, Aloni, nice, what's happening?
Hey, I just tuned in. I just had a couple of thoughts I wanted to pitch at you guys.
Alrighty.
I just wanted to let you know, I was at Three Trees actually the first day that they enforced the 6 o'clock, the sunset curfew.
Yeah.
And, well, anyway, I just wanted to let everybody know that I think it's like the first stages of martial law, you know, between that... Here in Santa Cruz, between, you know, like martial law and Halloween and like all the new laws they just came out with. I mean, it's like martial law Santa Cruz, man. It's ridiculous.
Spirit.
Well, it is true that if, you know, martial law is when they tell you, you know, there's curfews on the streets and that you can't have gatherings of more than three people and the police have essentially a military power. And the problem with the police downtown that I've seen, it was true when these laws were made worse in 2002, and it's even more true now, that the main problem that was being expressed by a lot of people who were downtown, at least in 2002, was police harassment and selective enforcement. And I see the same kind of pattern happening now. I see the police telling musicians, you can't play music because there's a heckler's veto from someone two blocks away who doesn't like your music. Yeah. It has nothing to do with the fact that the police don't say, you know, to the person who's making the complaint, you have to show it's unreasonable noise. Mm-hmm. If it's not unreasonable noise, you can complain all you want and not like it, but, you know, put in earplugs or turn up your radio, you know, or you know, pay some attention to something else.
This I understand, but what I'm trying to say, my man, is that we're moving more towards a progressive state. Like martial law, we're moving
military order, Aloni. Yeah,
because if we don't stand up against like the new crazy like rules downtown, for instance, where you can't sit 90% of the places. I mean, so they're privatized the beach at sunset, and then they privatized basically sitting on Pacific Avenue 90% of the places. So, I mean, tell me how we're not really going towards.
They're trying to reserve all this property for paying customers and well-to-do residents. And, you know, I mean, and part of this has to do with the fact that there's growing resentment on the streets, I think, because of the economic crisis. There's growing anxiety among people that they're going to fall into this situation. And so there's tension developing between people who are coming into town, between merchants who are looking at their profit sheets, and between the police who are being given orders to move people along. This results in, you know, more confrontations, more problems.
Right, and repression is a vicious circle. You know, the more that they repress us, the more that they crack down, the more the insecurity is, the more we feel repressed, the more the tension builds. And so it's a vicious circle.
I mean, the other reason, you know, like, I heard you describe martial law as a militant, like a military, like, kind of state where, like, the police have, like, a military, like, power. And, I mean, it kind of feels like that on Halloween, but it kind of felt like that this one time at the drum circle last year, wherein, like, I don't know, 5-minute response time. They showed up with a unit, you know, with riot gear. They had the shields. They had the sticks out. They were threatening to hit people. And then one really fat cop wanted to, like, shoot everyone with tear gas. He was splashing the tear gas.
I remember. That was September 17th in response to essentially the resistance of the drum circle to some ill-advised harassment and arrests by Sergeant Harms and his officers. I hear
yeah,
you.
I saw the whole
you
know. Thing.
Yeah, anything else you want to report, Aloni?
Well,
Aloni Spirit.
Okay, well, you know, I don't really feel what I'm doing. You know, I guess you could say, you know, or call it reporting. But more, I just want people to really think that, you know, and realize that we are in a state of oppression. To the point that in Santa Cruz we have to stand up
and
now, and from what
worse.
I've been told.
Now, do you have a...
The word on the streets is, to continue my reporting...
Aloni Spirit, do you have a cell phone yourself? Do you have a cell phone?
Yeah, I'm on it.
Well, the reason I suggest that is I think we should establish a network of you know, of contacts with each other. I would encourage you to give and everybody who has a cell phone who wants to be a part of this network to call into my off-air line at 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F. Leave your name and number, and I'll also advise you when there's going to be protests downtown, when there are going to be Know Your Rights forums that we can come to, when there are going to be boycotts against the main merchants who are pushing for these laws, when there are going to be demonstrations against the police department for withholding public records. That way we can kind of stay in touch with each other.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I'm sure we can stay in touch and all there, Robert.
You could do
Robert.
That, Aloni, and you'd make a
but
big
I mean,
impact
I,
with your girlfriends
I really,
and
I
whatnot.
I want to encourage more community involvement, because what I'm saying is the news on the street is that they don't want to they don't want to enforce all these new laws to like May. I don't think we should wait, and that's why I heard.
You got to understand, it's not the new.
We're organizing a protest right now. We're going to have another sit-in.
I agree with you, Aloni Spirit, and we need to have you and others come to meetings where these can be organized, or you invite us to your own meetings where you arrange to do this and let us know in advance. Huff meets every Wednesday, 9:30 to 11:30 at the Sub Rosa Cafe. That's on Wednesday morning, and the next.
I was thinking about checking you guys out there.
Do think about it, and in the meantime, as I say, give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF. Leave your phone number and your name, and we'll tell you about upcoming events. You can also leave your email if you have an email, and you can also come to the Human Rights Organization meeting on Saturday from 2 to 4 at the I think it's actually now from 3 to 5 at the Sub Rosa Cafe at Spruce and Pacific. Eric has something he wants to say.
Okay, knock him out.
Yeah, thanks, well, you know, we were talking about that incident with the drum circle, and also my own circumstance and the woman who we called her earlier who had
Donna
her arm
Dice.
Broken. It occurs to me that a lot of times the police, by their very presence, create the problem. Before the police get there, there's no problem. There's no major crimes being committed. You know, people are drumming or people are hanging out at Westcliff, or in my case, we're in the store on Mission Street. And until the police got there, there was, you know, what may have been going on was something very minor. But by their presence, they create the possibility of much greater crimes. You know, by their very presence. So you know, you can be charged with resisting arrest, or in my case, you know, attempting to grab the officer's gun because he was jostling with me. You know, by their presence, they make the stakes much higher.
Anything else, caller? I'm gonna move on to the next caller. Again, please give me your number
you,
at the Huff line.
Eric.
God bless you.
423.
God bless you, Eric.
Thank you, Aloni
Spirit,
and thank you for calling in.
Aloni, we love your plane.
And phone lines are open, 427-3772. I did promise I was going to...
Especially about
I was going to...
The police, Zoran says so.
Zoran? You're interrupting the important host here. My opinion is more important than yours. You know that. Okay, and it's more important than Eric's.
Comic
more important than everyone's. All right. Actually, did you want to say something?
Robert Norris is a god. Okay. I've seen him on radio.
All right, that's
before.
A little better. All right, now we're getting somewhere.
He's worshipped amongst me. He's okay. Like tea time in
Lowry
London.
Will
He's
get you
so
far.
Good.
All right.
The French people should know him.
I would just like to say, I would think that police presence ought to be where I would feel served and protected, and I would hope that that would be the experience of every Santa Cruzan here.
I must get so.
As opposed to what Eric had just stated, which... true, you feel a sense of tension where, it puts you on your best behavior, but if...
As soon as they get there, everybody's like, ooh, the cops are here.
What could you do? What can you do? And
well, that's
I'd like
it.
To feel secure.
That's the issue. I think Know Your Rights forums is what we need to talk about to deal with the police, because it's not really about these new laws. These new laws are just essentially they're a way of saying, yeah, more police, more pressure.
Yeah.
They don't really make... major changes, and that's why people like Councilmember Rotkin dismiss them as being, it's not that important. It's just a way of telling people to calm down and relax and be more well-behaved. And some of these things go in cycles. He has a rap he uses, Vice Mayor Rotkin does it, that sort of, rationalizes these essentially increased police discretion laws. So, but what we need to do is we need to find ways of addressing the police or the hosts or any people who are acting to enforce police power, when they come up upon you and tell you to do this or to do that, we have
education
to have you, people have to be aware,
to
Zoran. People have to be aware of ways of addressing these issues in ways that require the police to be accountable, so that they, in essence, have to either back off
that, yes.
Or face the solidarity of at least part of the community. I know some of the community that supports the police.
The
I think
awesome
mindlessly.
The awesome
but,
power that they have over you when,
so
when they're in
your presence.
What I'm
saying is we need to organize. And
yes,
simply talking about the awesome power, which I think we should, and talking about how, we have to talk about the awesome power, and you're right by doing it.
Just
but
by walking near you and talking to you, the police hold this tremendous power over you to take away your liberty.
We have power in response if we can use it, and that is what we're going to have to find ways to do.
Hail Norris.
Through getting
together.
Needs
to be checked and balanced by some other force.
Right, and that I'm hoping is what we can do by documenting when these things happen, by showing people ways of requiring the police to act at least lawfully, though as the laws get worse, that's not going to be terribly helpful.
And who doesn't need buddies?
In some respects. So anyway, I'm going to, along that line, I'm going to start playing a few things, unless, Eric, you have more you want to talk about. I know you've got some quotes you're working on that you've, some nasty quotes from downtown merchants and residents.
I have
Zoran.
Plenty of material
Zoran,
here.
Zoran, thank you.
Go ahead with your
Zoran.
Programming.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And again, if people want to call in on this issue, I really think that in order to do something, it's important to voice yourself on free radio, and that's a good way to do it, whether now or on other shows. But it's also good if you are harassed by the police or if you've seen it happen, call the Huff line at 423-HUFF and leave a message as to where it happened, when it happened, what officers were involved, how long it took, what you heard. And also, if you want to work with Copwatch, volunteer your name and number and email, and we'll get you hopefully working on these issues and come to these two meetings I mentioned. The Human Rights Organization meeting at 3 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe at Pacific and Spruce on Saturday, and the Huff meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 9:30 in the morning at the same place, the Sub Rosa Cafe, Pacific and Spruce, on Wednesday morning. And again, you don't have to come to meetings. You don't like meetings, but you want to help. Just leave your phone number, and we'll try to set up a network and let you know when there's going to be a Know Your Rights forum, when there's going to be a protest, when there's going to be a meeting with a council member, however useless that might be. And along that line, let me go back to a meeting I did have with a council member. This is a council member... If I can find the right tape.
We love you, Food Ben. I worship you. I was born in
this
a basket there. I still don't know if I'm home or not or Santa Cruz.
Oh, goddess. Zoran is available for private sessions at a later time.
I need them. $135 an hour, you're not calling.
Thank you, Zoran. Thank you. All right, so what we've got here now is... I have a tape I was playing before where I actually met with Councilmember Rotkin, trying to find the right cord here. I've turned turn down your mic there, Zoran. You can whisper in Nina's ear. Please don't abuse our ears. All right, what we got here is this is an interview with Mike Rodkin that I had at the Westside Roasting Company. It was actually open. It was open to the community. Thank you. And I played the first part of this interview, which was about the downtown ordinances. The second part of it is about the issue of the metro, which I've talked about it on the air before. I was ticketed. I was arrested, not taken to jail, but I was essentially told by the police I couldn't leave. That's an arrest. And written a citation for refusing to leave the metro area. It was actually the sidewalk area in front of the metro at the entranceway because I was interviewing two homeless people. And I was getting harassed by the metro guards. The guards told me to leave. They gave me no reason to leave. I said, no, I'm not going to leave. I have the right to be in the it's a public, open to the public area. And the police colluded in this attempt to remove my rights by essentially forcing me to leave under threat of arrest. So I asked Councilmember Rodkin, or Vice Mayor Rodkin, who is also on the Metro Transit Board. The first thing he told me was, because I said we're coming back to do a protest and do exactly the same thing, only this time on videotape.
Wow.
And with a lot of audio tape and number of people watching, and give out leaflets. He said, you can't leaflet at the Metro. It's illegal to give out leaflets at the Metro. And I said, well, we'll see about that. We'll see just what goes on. Now, he did call me back on the day of the protest and said, I've reexamined that issue, and I found it is legal to give out leaflets at the Metro. And Mike Rodkin wanted me to say publicly that that is, in fact, the case. It is legal to give out leaflets. But the fact that he would even suggest that it was illegal and that he would not be taking action against that as a great free speech advocate, because that's what he claims to be up on campus where he's an instructor, and he claims to oppose the UCSC rules that limit you from having a sign on campus without the permission of the provost or whoever the appropriate person is to me really kind of outrageous. But let's hear what he has to say about this issue. And if anybody wants to interrupt with some commentary or thoughts, let me know and we'll stop the tape. And that includes all you listeners out there, 427-3772. Give me a call and we'll talk.
The ordinance is involved in the Metro, in case you want to review them more closely. The actual laws involved. I should tell the audience what's happening. On November 2nd, I was cited for talking to two.
Sounds like a tape recorder that needs a shot in the arm. I'm going to try another machine and see if we can get a better reading here. Maybe it's a connection problem, but let's see how we can do here.
Laws. But I should tell the audience what's happening. On November 2nd, I was cited for talking to two homeless people at the Metro, and the ticket is for about $260. It's a $50 fine, which gets increased by astronomical amounts of court additional assessments. And I was charged with trespass with intent to with refusal to leave a business, where the business was the area 3 feet from the public sidewalk, which is the entrance to the Metro. And the reason I didn't leave was because it's actually an issue I've discussed at great length on free radio, and I don't know if I want to spend a lot of time with you, Mike, on it. I do want, and you made some notes, you've been good enough to read the literature I've given you. You are on the Metro Transit Board, and the issue really is, for me, when a police officer tells an individual citizen or a resident or community member to leave the area, not even a police officer, a security guard, are there any guidelines? Can an individual say, what am I doing wrong that you find requires you? What is my criminal behavior? And if the guard says, I don't have to tell you anything, just leave. I asked you a month and a half ago, 2 months ago on free radio, to take the Metro Board and get a statement of clarification that the police officers should not have and do not have that power. They have to cite some specific reason, and the reason I say that particularly is because of the code section, which talks about remaining trespass on public transit facilities, which provides a very specific set of guidelines about what to do, unlike the ordinance that they're using to cite people, which is refusal to leave a business, which is much broader, although it does have certain exceptions that are actually relevant to people who are trying to, you know, simply stand in what is publicly used property, although technically it may be privately leased in some way. Tell us a little bit about the Metro Authority. Is it privately leased? You've been on the Metro Board for a while. You helped break a bus strike once, right?
Which question would you like me to answer?
Oh, I didn't want you to like.
Thanks.
Just trying to get, you know, rouse the troops, Mike. Never.
Everybody needs some coffee, so there's a good break for that. The first of all, one of the questions was, you know, the Metro owns the land that the Metro station sits on. If it was, the question was at least,
or
was
Metro a public board, which is, you know, gets public funding, it has city council members on its board. It's different than a private business.
Yeah, it's one of these sort of quasi-public institutions in the sense that the board of directors is appointed by a number of different political jurisdictions, various cities and the county, but some private individuals. And while on the one hand it has certainly a public purpose, it has the same right as a number of other sort of similar kinds of institutions, the post office, for example, and a number of other places. Although they're public institutions, they're not the same as public free speech areas. The rights that you have on a public sidewalk are not necessarily extended to the land that the transit district sits on, inside the post office. You can pick a number of other kinds of similar places. They're clearly public. You clearly want to have, there's certain rights you have there that are more than the rights inside my living room or your, you know, your house.
Bring to the Metro Board my request that there be a specific grievance or crime or reason given by a police officer before they demand a person leave the property. Because my concern was not simply for myself. I was told, and I've seen this happening to other people.
Question, I'll remember the question and answer it.
Well, that's the same question. I'm repeating it. You moved into another area, Mike.
You were starting to talk more. I want to answer your question.
Go ahead, then.
The question was, I'm sorry.
Again, I brought to your attention the public question about whether the limits of security guard power and the rights of the public. I mean, that's really the issue.
The answer is yes. I did bring the question of, like, making sure that... Well, let me go back a little bit, and without a long-winded answer. The people have... it's a public space in the sense that people have to be there to get on the bus unless you've been banned from the bus for some particular behavior, which requires a whole bunch of findings. People basically have to get to the bus, and all kinds of people take the bus, and so it's, you know, in that sense it's sort of certainly a public area in that way. However, the district has rights to limit certain kinds of behavior beyond what you might be able to be limited on in a public sidewalk or some other kind of public space. The what I try to clarify at the board meeting, which was on TV, and apparently you missed it, but I...
You might give me a tape.
But I don't know that we have a tape. Anyway, it was on a public meeting.
You probably do.
The
not you, but that's probably...
But I, you know, they're trying to make clear that because what we basically have, first of all, I had earlier misspoken when I said that, you know, wasn't legal to leaflet at the transit center. I did call you back and clarify that information. And I'm going
to. It was after our protest, but we leafleted anyway, and that was fine.
And unfortunately, you're still circulating a leaflet that says that that I told you that it was not legal to leaflet, and then you don't bother to tell them. It's now what, a couple months since then, and you haven't bothered.
That has been posted on IndieBay. I'm not circulating this leaflet. I brought along for your information.
I misunderstood.
I mean, it was circulated when we did the protest. By that time, we did not have your information.
Anyway, I did bring it to the attention.
You had given us misinformation, in fact, that it was illegal to leaflet.
And I called up, apologized. I said, I don't know everything.
You didn't apologize, but you did clarify.
Robert, I called up and I said, I'm sorry, I had it wrong. I definitely apologized.
I'm going to have to go to that.
Apologize now if I didn't then.
Thank you.
Pretty sure I did apologize.
Fair enough.
Because, you know, occasionally I get things wrong.
No.
What basically the regulations say down there, and in terms of the instructions, which is more to the point that the security guards get from us, and this is what I reinforced at the meeting, was that, you know, they need to make sure that if they're asking people to leave, that they have be on the basis that they're disrupting the function of the transit district, because people are harassing other passengers or causing problems for people, other people that are there. And I wasn't there when whatever the problem that you had and got this citation. So I'm in no position to say whether you were in fact disrupting, bothering people or anything else, or whether you were simply innocently standing there.
Have you heard the audio tape of the entire incident?
No, I haven't.
It's online. Anyway, but the point is...
Quickly finish. So... I tried to explain at the district meeting that I thought it was important that people not be asked to move on. Just and I say I wasn't saying that they had done this. I had no idea whether they had or not. But that we should make sure we train our security guards to understand that they shouldn't be moving people along just based on their appearance or their politics or whatever they or the content of the leaflet if they're leafleting. But in fact, you know, it has to be based on disrupting the district or bothering.
I would agree with that.
And
thank you for doing that, Mike.
And that should be the basis from which this stuff happens.
And was is that now a new training policy, or is that simply your speech to the board?
I think, although there was no new policy, basically what I was saying is I thought that was our policy, and I'm just trying to reinforce that that's the basis on which that kind of enforcement should take place. I got general assent from people. There was no vote or motion or something, but the nodding of heads and everything else, nobody disagreed with that statement, so I think it stands. As
when was that meeting? Do you remember? November, December?
It would have been the when were you cited?
November 2nd.
November 2nd, probably November then. It was one of the
because I got this.
Probably the second meeting in November.
I got this notice of this citation, which I don't have with me, in the mail in mid-December. So obviously the city police are still following through the trespass complaint.
Well, it would have been after you first contacted me about this.
Yeah.
So whenever that, I don't know.
Right.
Either we would have gotten
and
either
I want
November
to say, honestly, I have not heard a lot of complaints from homeless people being cleared away from the metro. But again, this is the same issue we discussed earlier of forbidden zones. One of the reasons I believe the security guard wanted me to leave was because I said when he was advising two Hispanic people that they couldn't sit where they were sitting, that they have a right to be in that area, that they weren't blocking the area, that there are no rules that say no sitting posted, and that this was looked to me like a form of illegal discrimination that they could resist it. Their response was, we don't want any trouble with the police, and they want to move on. That was fine. The guard was offended by what I was doing, as he was earlier offended by the fact that I pointed out that they were broadcasting religious KSCO Sunday sermons over the speaker, probably because they weren't aware that's what was happening on a Sunday with KSCO. But nonetheless, and I'm just acknowledging that I have not gotten a lot of complaints about, you know, people being harassed at the metro. I've gotten some. Much more complaints about people being harassed on Pacific Avenue by the police. And that's the problem with the ordinances. Can I... you want your 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, no, what I just wanted to say was quickly that...
You got to say
something. Just because you've said other stuff about it or suggested other motives. I mean, for example, in the one leaflet I was just looking at here, the suggestion was they were playing these sermons to try and drive away homeless people. In fact, when it was drawn to the attention of the supervisor at the Metro Center that they were playing this, you know, religious programming over the speaker, they shut it off immediately. They had been they thought they were playing music on the air, and then it was on a radio station. That's what happened. And was it not the case that immediately when it came to their attention,
you should listen to the tape, because when I said that, when I pointed out that music was being broadcast over the speakers, he first said, "Well, we do that to make it, you know, uncomfortable for people who are sitting out there because we don't want certain kinds of people." He actually acknowledged that. I'm not quoting him exactly. This has been done at 7-Elevens. It was done in front of New Leaf Market, but you know, in the late 90s.
Well, I know it's been done in a number of places, but that's not the transit district's policy.
Make sure it doesn't get done now, please.
In fact, I hope you'll admit that as soon as it was brought to the attention of the supervisor there, they changed the programming.
Well,
the religious thing
was changed, but not the intention. The intention, he didn't have any problem with the intention. The problem he had was with the religious content of it. I mean, you know, it's obviously a violation of separation of church and state and possibly a lawsuit. So, I mean, and frankly, I didn't really care a lot, except two homeless guys came up on the street and said to me, "We don't like what they're doing." And the point was not so much that. They complained to a security guard, and the security guard treated them like pieces of shit, wouldn't talk to them. When I went up and talked to the same security guard, he refused to give his name, he refused to give his supervisor's name, he refused to talk to me, and he refused to take any action on this. The only reason I got action was because I went to the supervisor who happened to be pulling up. A nice guy, and we chatted about it, and he said, "Oh, well, that sounds, you know, we are doing this, you know, in order to discourage gatherings in front of the metro, but this certainly is not the right way to go about it in terms of this." And he did shut off the music. I came back an hour later. That's when I got the ticket, essentially from the same security guard. Well, it was
So the question, Robert, it comes down to this, and I wasn't there, whether the way in which you were letting people know what their rights were was interfering with the officer or doing something else that was causing a problem, or whether it wasn't. If, in fact, you were just trying to talk to somebody and not bothering.
My case isn't important.
Can I finish?
Yes.
Whether that was happening and stuff, then you have a situation, which I'm sure happens, that some security guard, poorly paid security guard, not well trained, was not doing the job that he's supposed to.
I don't care about my
case. I say it was either that was what was happening, because there probably are cases of security guards overstepping the bounds of what they're supposed to be doing and not following what our instructions are, or you have a situation where you were acting out in a way that they were appropriately
or
arrested.
There's a pattern,
and I have no way of knowing what
or there's a pattern of behavior, and security guards are advised to drive people away from the front of the metro who may consider create, as you might put it in your speech as a city council, an unwelcoming environment for those who are shoppers and consumers.
And as you yourself admitted just a moment ago, there's not a general pattern down there of the security guards driving people away because of their appearance or the kinds of things that, you know, you would be concerned about. There
last year there was. I haven't heard about it recently, though.
Now I'm going to interrupt this tape to make a few comments here. And it's interesting to hear the interaction between myself and the vice mayor and the member of the Metropolitan Metro Security Board, Transit Board, Mike Rotkin. You know, it would seem to me that a person who claims to be concerned with civil rights and civil liberties in Santa Cruz and fair treatment, I mean, I'm glad Mike made a speech. He did make a speech at City Council saying, and I'm quoting what he said, I didn't actually hear the speech, that the real basis for asking people to leave from a security guard should be disrupting the functions of the transit district or causing problems for other people who were there. And that, you know, that makes more sense. What Mike had the option to do but did not do was listen to the tape, which was posted on IndyBay. He could hear it if he want. I recorded the entire progress of everything that happened between me and the security guard. The security guard first gave no explanation as to why he demanded me to leave, and then later told the police he was blocking one of the signs. That was the only thing he said, and he said that later as an explanation. It would seem to me that any member of the board who listened to this tape, who actually had an interest in this case, and Rotkin was advised of this case, he was alerted to it, and who had given all misinformation about flyering earlier, as Rotkin did, his responsibility was to listen to this and then actually raise the issue before these guards and say, wait a minute, you know, ask the guard specifically, are you, you know, engaged in this kind of practice? And if so, perhaps you should be retrained. Instead, he's saying, take it to court and see if you win or lose, and that'll be the resolution because I wasn't there. Well, it's true that Mike wasn't there, but it's also true that there's a tape that was there that he can listen to if he chooses to, and he has chosen not to. In fact, he has chosen instead just to make some general statements and also some false statements. He says, well, you know, we don't do that. We don't use, loud music to drive people away. And the answer is, yes, they do. Or at least that's what the supervisor said they were doing. He said, and as I said, the supervisor turned off, and that's on tape. Supervisor didn't like the fact that I was taping him, but there's a reason that I tape these people, because they can't then later claim, and their politician bosses can't later claim, as Rotkin does, that they didn't say what they said. So, you know, it's important that we know what really goes on and not the way that Mike Rotkin wants to spin the issue at City Council. Yes, people are harassed regularly at the Metro. Yes, they have removed all the benches on the public sidewalk from in front of the Metro. That's not the Metro that did it. That's Mike Rotkin's City Council responsible Parks and Rec Department or Public Works Department. Without any public hearings, they've removed all benches from the Metro area. They've set up four separate change-making machines or ATMs in that area that essentially make it illegal to sit anywhere on the sidewalk in front of the Metro. So they've both removed the benches and they've removed the right to sit down on the sidewalk in front of the Metro. And they've given apparently the security guards the power, if not the directive, to go after people who they think are hanging out. At least that's how it looked to me that day. Now, the fact that I told Mike, and it was true, that I haven't gotten a lot of complaints about the Metro doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of complaints. It just means that I haven't heard about them. People don't regularly come to me with a lot of complaints. I have to go out and find them, and I don't spend a lot of time walking up and down the Metro with my tape recorder. I probably should. The fact of the matter is I'm still facing a criminal charge, an infraction charge, for refusing to leave the Metro. Rotkin has not gone to the city attorney and said, you know, you better look this over. There's a tape, you know, that says that, you know, all he was doing was talking to people. And, you know, the guard admitted that all he was supposed to be doing was blocking the main sign to the Metro. He didn't even ask him to move away from the sign and clarify that. So you might have a lawsuit on your hands. And after all, in a time of, you know,
city budget problem, that would be a difficulty for the city. Why incur those kinds of expenses? And the answer is because we want to give the police a blank check to do whatever the fuck they want. Exactly. That Throw seems to be the problem here. You have any comments on any of this, Eric, Nina, or, dare I say it, Zoran?
Well, be wary of giving the police power. You know, the police only have the power that we, the people, give them. The courts and the laws are of our making. And we need to always be aware of the power that we give them. And, you know, they just keep in mind that, you know, they would be perfectly happy for us to be huddled around our campfires and them in their armored personnel vehicles, you know, with searchlights. That would be make them perfectly happy. You know, do we want that? Do we want, you know, it seems to me it's a, there's a conflict between two different points of view. And those who want to crack down and those who want to open up. Do we want to repress ourselves into oblivion? Or do we want to reach out and try to help our brother, our neighbor, our fellow man?
So, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. That was Eric, who still has a black left eye based on a police fist that he got several weeks ago, and now he has a criminal charge. Also in the studio are Nina and the irrepressible Zoran, who is fondling the microphone Robert. Even as I speak.
It's been a long time.
You can call in at 427-3772 if you'd like to be a part of this menage à quatre, or is it cinq? I don't know. We'll see how exciting it gets. There's only about 20 minutes left in the show. Uncle Dennis is
did good.
From the cream to the dregs comes on, and I'm supposed to be doing some uploading here, so I'm going to put on a little music and give Uncle Dennis, if he's around, the chance to call in and advise me, because I have not got, you know, is not what he wants done has not been done. And I'll tell you, I don't know quite how to do it. So Dennis, or anyone else who's listening, if you are interested in having stuff done in the studio before I leave in 20 minutes, give me a call.
There is no one less equal or beyond the call, and the rights of the least are the rights of the tall. As injustice for one is injustice for all, and if one of us stumbles, all of us fall, and we'll dance, yes, we'll dance. Shake off the shackles of our own circumstance. We'll dance, yes, we'll dance. And we'll leap up and speak up and seize up the chance. And we'll dance through the muck and we'll dance through the mire. We'll dance as though our immortal soul were on fire. And we'll dance for the basics that this life requires, till our sentence of dance is finally expired. And we'll dance through the mud, we'll dance through the mire, we'll dance as though our immortal soul were on fire. And we'll dance for the basics that this life requires, until our sentence of dance has finally expired.
And that was Jim Hendy, Shout Down the Wind is the name of the album, and that was the second half of the dance song. I'm going to play a little bit more from the interview with Mike Rotkin that we had. Actually, it was a meeting between him, myself, and Rick, who is a member of HUF and the Human Rights Organization. We were chatting with the vice mayor at the Westside Coffee Company. The first part of that interview can be found on an earlier show on Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides a week ago. And you can hear that first part of that interview if you'd like. Let's go to the rest of it. I think it's almost over. Let's see what we got.
But, you know, again, our instructions are that people aren't supposed to do that. It's supposed to be a walking place for everybody.
And I appreciate you bringing that to
their attention. So be careful not to overstep the description of what's going on.
We have a question.
So, Mike, wouldn't you say that it's unusual or unfortunate that there was a 7-0 vote on these new ordinances?
Why would that be unfortunate?
He likes the ordinance. Why would he
not? I mean, to me, that says there's nobody looking out for the other guy. It's all the middle class people. It's all the shopkeepers, the business owners that are being sided with. Nobody is considering the rights of anybody in a lesser role. Not one person on the city council voted to at least take a look at these. Let's postpone the vote. Let's take a look at these. It was like a landslide victory for businesses and middle-class people and above. And so, I don't know if you can respond to that, but...
No, I will. Seriously.
Okay, and my other question is, how are people supposed to know what they can and can't do now? There seems to me to be so many different ordinances downtown. I mean, other than walk and shop, where can I sit? How are people going to know this? Or are they just not going to know it and they're going to be cited? And then they'll know it.
Well, two things. There's two questions there. One was about the 7-0 vote.
Yeah, I'm interested.
I don't perceive that the only people in favor of the things we do are business people and middle class folks and whatever. I'm not sure what the term middle class means exactly. I perceive that there's a very wide set of public opinions, including working people throughout the city, who think that what's going on downtown, what's been going on in the last year, particularly downtown Santa Cruz, is not inviting or comfortable for them. And this includes people who have blue-collar jobs and people who are, you know, and we get, again, there's letters, calls, and so forth, and it's not just rich people and not just about shoppers. It's about the people that live in this town and the wide spectrum of them. Now, I don't think it's the case that nobody on the city council cares about poor people or low-income people. We have lots of programs trying to address those concerns, more than most cities. But I think that the perception that we're only doing this because the business people think it's a good idea is not accurate. If you look through, and Robert has these, I assume, he requested them, I'm sure he'll get them, that the letters that we got and where they came from and how these people describe who they are and what they're concerned about, we're talking about people that work, they're not middle-class people, they work in these shops down there. You know,
Cynthia Matthews has denied me access to those letters so far.
Well, you'll go to court and get them if she denies them too long.
Why should I have to go to court? Why should a citizen have to go to court to get public records?
I don't think you should have to. I assume that you'll get these things.
Get those from me from yourself, Mike. You have a right to access to them, do you not, as a city council member, to look at the correspondence to the mayor?
Yeah, well, we all got copies. If I can find mine, I'll give it to you.
That would resolve the whole issue. I'd appreciate that.
If you can find it, maybe you can get copies of them.
I'll do my...
And Mike did not do that, but Cynthia Matthews herself, some days later, did release those copies. And I believe, Eric, you took a look at some of them today at the city council staff. Any comments about those documents? I know they went back further, and they were more general than the material in the packets, the agenda packets. We're talking about two different sets of information. That one of them was Cynthia Matthews. She held up a file during the city council meeting, the first one on the ordinances, the downtown ordinance readings, and said, "This are all the complaints I've had for the last few years, and I had trouble getting those documents." That's what I'm talking about. The second, that what Eric was earlier talking about, is a very thick packet of emails that is attached to the agenda of the city council that anybody can read at the reference desk, and there's a similar second packet with the second city council meeting. But anyway, you looked at these. The stuff that Cynthia Matthews was holding back, was there any reason to hold it back? Was there any, you know, secret information in there? What was it about?
Pretty much what you'd expect. Just a lot of people who are a lot of insensitivity to the needs of the poor. I was struck by a number of points. First of all, there's no names in there. There's a lot of talk about the homeless and the vagrants and the ne'er-do-wells and the just all kinds of words like that. But none of these people seems to have a personal relationship with any of these people downtown. There's no names. It's not personal. If any of you people who are on the other side of this issue are out there listening, I would just recommend that you just stop for a moment when you're walking downtown. Instead of being afraid of these people, just stop for a moment, give them a quarter, and ask them their name. Ask them what's their situation. Every one of these people, I guarantee you, every one of them. Okay, maybe there's a 0.1% out there that they're criminals. Maybe they should be in jail. But I've been on the streets of Santa Cruz for 15 years, and I'll tell you, everybody's got a story. Everybody's got a reason why they're there. Nobody wants to be homeless. Nobody wants to be poor. Get that through your heads. Nobody wants to be there. They don't want to be out there panhandling your money. They'd much rather be you. They'd much rather be the one being panhandled. I guarantee it. Nobody chooses to be poor. Everybody wants to be rich. Another thing that struck me about these emails and letters is 95% of these people started their letter off by saying, "Sorry I couldn't be at the meeting today, but I just thought I'd fire off an email to you about how I just approve of all of these new crackdown measures." You know, these people seem to be so concerned about this issue, and yet they don't have the time to come down to one meeting and talk about this. You know, how important is this really to you? I think these people are just, it's all about convenience for them. The poor and the homeless are just a nuisance. They're just an inconvenience to them. And I just encourage these people to think, put yourself in the other person's shoes for once. And think about what I was talking about earlier, about this awesome power that you're unleashing of the police. You know, when the police are there, you realize, oh my God, you know, you're told all your life, you're taught when you're a kid, you know, that we're Americans, you know, and we have rights. But when the police are there and you're poor and you ain't got nothing, it's you against them. You realize the slightest misstep on your part and your liberty's gone. You can't do anything about it. The cuffs are on. You're in the back of that car. You're put in the cell, the concrete jail, and you can't get out of there. Your liberty's gone. So much for America for you. Do we want to unleash this power on these people? Do we really want to repress these people? Why not help them? You know, they've been kicked out of every other decent town in California, so they're here. Why not? Maybe Santa Cruz could do something different. Maybe we could set an example of helping them out, doing something for them. These people just, if there's any overarching conclusion that I draw from reading these emails and letters, it's just people, you know, you need to have love for your brother. You need to have consideration for the plight of others.
And when you're confronted with the police, when you have to deal with somebody.
Hold it. Zoran has a comment. Go ahead, Zoran.
Yeah, when you're confronted by the police, when you have to deal with somebody that does well to badges, paid a nominal amount of money now after the federal tariffs and whatnot, then it is wise there of supplication where you do want some understanding of human rights and how to deal with such a fine officer or gentleman that is going to take you away. And I found that when I photo-read through all of the letters, there were only like two or three that are really serious criminal offenses. I think, too, if you're local and you've been here for a long time, I think the police should kind of residential you, I believe, or make it so that you can be warned in a way that is fair. The police are a nominal force now. We have to accept them. We're in war. I believe in our nation that we need to trust them in a way like feathers rather than rain, where I don't know if I can anymore. I want to. But it seems that they are building in numbers for some sort of control. And I know that when I read one letter, it was something about, you know, the whole Drug Enforcement Agency installing cameras above, you know, I won't say borders or anything like that. And then, you know, the thoughts of that are, well, what if the DEA does come down and bust you? Do they send the pot dealers just down the street, you know, or is there something more that we
actually
can do?
Actually, that was an article by in the Good Times about Sergeant Harms and the SCPD using the businesses of the second stories on Second Pacific Avenue to observe. Yeah, we got only about 5 minutes left in the show. What is it, Eric? Go ahead.
Okay, well, I just want to ask, you know, whence cometh this faith in the police and the courts? You know, there's a story that just hit the news today about this scandal about the judges taking kickbacks for putting the teens into these boot camps. You know, and you know, we've all heard about the shooting of the we've seen it on YouTube, the shooting of this young man in Oakland, mm-hmm, that just took place. You know, think twice before you put your faith in these institutions, the police and the courts. They're blunt instruments.
You know, the problem is that we aren't really talking to the middle-class people, mostly, who are the big mob behind, you know, at least were mobilized behind these ordinance changes that made it worse, and supporting police enforcement, or over-enforcement, I would say, and overcharging and so forth. We are really talking to the people who are allowing it to happen. That is to say, the counterculture community, the folks out there who don't really approve of it, but they're either too busy or too apprehensive or
too scared
or too struggling to get, you know, their money together to pay the rent, to get together and deal with this issue. And that really is a problem. I only have 4 minutes left, and I'm going to invite you all back on Sunday morning when the show returns, Sunday edition, at 9:30 in the morning, actually maybe even a little earlier. We can play some more of this. I'm going to finish up with Rotkin's tape. And then Uncle Dennis, who is not here, has asked me to put on his show. I believe there's a David Rovics concert tonight, a benefit happening. I'm not quite sure where. It doesn't seem to be posted in the studio. If anybody's listening, wants to call in and give that information, I'll certainly pass it on. I want to thank our guests for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadside and invite them back in 3 days.
Thank you, Robert.
For a longer show, and we have a caller. Again, that's going to be on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning. Hi, you're on Free Radio. What's your name, caller?
Andrea.
Hey, Andrea, what's up?
I just wanted to let you know that that David Roberts concert is tonight from 7:30 to 9:30, I believe, at the Live Oak Grange.
It's way out there, and it's already begun.
Yeah, it's at 17. Isn't that Live Oak Grange on 17th Avenue, Robert?
I believe so, but they're out there somewhere.
Yeah, I just wanted to put that out there.
Thank you, Andrea. Bye-bye. All right, this is the end of the Mike Rotkin interview, and then we're going to go into Uncle Dennis's show. I want to thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
We love you, Santa Cruz.
To get them, it's not a problem. You and I probably agree on that. If you're not being given access to a list that was waved about in public, it's a public document.
Correct.
And you would win in court. I said that not to say you should have to go to court. I said that to say that's what the law requires.
I appreciate your offering to facilitate and avoid that process. Can I, because we only have 10 minutes left, but you didn't, this, the second question that Rick had, he's answered these questions publicly is the problem. I mean,
but if you want to give a quick, what was the question again?
How do people know what they can and can't do now?
2-foot square zones and make it relatively well. It's 14 feet for spare changing and sitting. It's 10 feet for.
I'm not asking you what they are. I'm saying how a person wants to casually go downtown. How does he know they're not breaking the law?
There are little leaflets that the host put out, and there are also police officers are being directed to give an informational campaign first. Although they, you know, it hasn't really changed much. It has changed significantly, and this is something you did not address at council for sitting and spare changing. There's significantly less space now for that, given the 14-foot extension from a number of other things. Let me turn to a couple of things, because I had a lot that I didn't really get to. You I don't know if you've acknowledged it or not. I think I may have referred to it. You didn't clarify how much more space was being lost to spare changers and sitters and political tablers based upon these new laws, one. And two, how much space is currently not allowed for, you know, all these innocent behaviors. And they are innocent behaviors. I mean, you certainly acknowledge that. Except where it's abusive, it's innocent. Except where people are blocking the sidewalk or catcalling, it's innocent. Is that not true?
Well, it's not always innocent. It's innocent in the sense that people aren't intending to, like, harm somebody else. But the behavior itself may, you know, the part of the problem is, again, many of these things, Robert, you're always insisting it could just be solved by enforcing existing laws.
More coffee, for
No, thanks. The problem is, and I think you're aware of this, and I assume most of your listeners are, that it's now very complex how you actually, in modern, in the court system, what it takes to demonstrate or prove that somebody's guilty of having violated a particular crime. Often the issue of intent comes into the matter, the question of who witnessed it, the amount of the evidence that's present. So a lot of the kinds of behaviors that are, quote, innocent, let's say a large crowd of people that in effect completely block the sidewalk. Now, if an officer goes down there and says to people, you're blocking the sidewalk, if they park the ways for that officer, they can't be cited for blocking the sidewalk because they moved out of his way. The fact that they'll move out of the way for a police officer saying you're blocking the sidewalk, but they will not budge an inch for a family's coming down the sidewalk or for some, you know, senior citizen or even just a regular, you know,
documentation of people refusing to move when a family walks by. You use that so glibly, and yet I wonder how many times that actually happened.
Absolute personal experience of it on many occasions, and I've seen it happen for other people, and I've often seen the situation where those folks will not move out of the way unless you're just absolutely aggressive with them yourself about getting out of it, moving them out of your way, and it almost takes a posture of, like, I'm ready to fight about this before they'll move. And some of the people we're talking to, and most of these folks are not homeless, let's not blame the homeless for this behavior, but the young people that are doing this kind of stuff
I dispute that, actually. I know that's a constant refrain you and those who support these ordinances use. You haven't actually done any studies, though, about that, have you? I mean, come on. You make all these allegations that criminalize a lot of innocent behavior, but you have no stats to back it up other than, I've seen it with my own eyes, but you didn't investigate where they came from.
Robert, you have an obsession with stats. I have my personal experience of it.
Did you ask these people where they come from? Do you know whether they're homeless or not?
I've stood around in these crowds. I know some of these people are Santa Cruz High students. Some are UCSC students. Some are people that just live in Santa Cruz and, like, live the surf life. Other people are just hanging out. Some are drug dealers or drug users. There's a wide range of activities.
And
many of them have homes in Santa Cruz.
In the last month, in the last year, how many people have you actually talked to verify who they are or recognize people who refused to move when a middle-class person walked through, and you could verify that those people were not homeless? I mean, it probably happens outside the Catalyst more than anywhere else, and they never get any problem. Because people who refuse to move, it's not going to be illegal as long as they're standing up. This is another example of how absurd your ordinances are. They don't criminalize standing there. They criminalize sitting down, which it's quite, you can negotiate. People are not going to be sitting in the middle of the sidewalk. They don't. They used to sit off. You can. But this is, to me, an obvious absurdity of these laws. And I don't understand. It's not that I want you to answer all these questions now, Mike. It seems to me people need to sit down, everybody in a room, and talk about it in a way that's reasonable instead of passing a prefabricated agenda 7-0. I'm sorry, that's my speech.
Mike, why does there have to be...
Respond to it at some point.
Why does there have to be a new ordinance to address something like that? Why can't the cop on the block for that day just, if he encounters it, say, you're blocking the sidewalk?
Mike's answer is you can't.
Let me answer the question, Rob.
You already did answer the question.
I'll answer very briefly. Because, in fact, when the officer shows up, they tend to stop the behavior. That behavior happens when cops are not on the scene. That's the problem.
But the answer is also that citizens, as Mike has acknowledged earlier, need, I don't know if you say they need to, but they aren't empowering themselves to say, don't fuck with me, don't mess with me. I want a certain rights in this situation, the right to public passage through here. Please let me through. And the community of people on the streets needs to be, not through police coercion and class war, because that's what this looks like to us, need through an understanding of leading people on the streets who are saying, we're dumping these forbidden zones. We're going to set up codes of conduct where the people who are regularly on the streets, and most people regularly on the streets are, you know, pretty mellow, I mean, and there are some. There, you get groups that come and go that aren't.
Let me agree with that at least.
Yeah, and but they're being criminalized along with the rest of the folks, and everybody, including the non-mellow folks, are being crammed into smaller and smaller spaces. And you can point all you want to seven spaces along here, but the great majority of space is now forbidden for people for sitting,
for standing, talking,
for spare changing,
for sitting, talking, for standing around, talking with your friends, walking down on the sidewalk, stopping and looking in the shop. Stopping and looking through the windows downtown.
Consumer behavior.
No, that's not.
And some assembly, but the actual fact. Wait a minute.
Not just consumer. Look, I know your mantra here is that this is all about money and the capitalist system. I said mantra because you say it over and over again.
The business people were the main force.
The window shopping is not consumer behavior. I go down there. There's many stores down there that sell things I have no use for and I'm not unlikely to buy. It doesn't stop me from looking in the windows.
Nobody's stopping you and nobody's stopping them. The idea that, you know. What you're really trying to do is not just stop aggressive behavior, but drive away groups of people who other people find uncomfortable. And that became very clear at the city council meeting. Would you not agree?
I believe that some people, many people at that meeting in the audience and perhaps other council members, I can't speak for them, that would be their desire. That's not my desire. And many people who were there were very clear that the issue was not that people look, like homeless or down and out or ugly or whatever, or... but that they were concerned about the actual behaviors that people are involved in. And let me just say, I don't think it's reasonable to say to somebody who's from out of town or from our community, you have to go when there's a big crowd of people blocking the sidewalk or sitting in a way that makes it so you have to kind of step around them on the sidewalk, that they should have to do that. People want to feel like they shouldn't have to ask somebody to move out of their way. It should be an open space where people can walk comfortably.
I agree.
Request of somebody to move.
But the issue of the way to address that is not through a secret behind back doors process, which you, in essence, endorsed through not sending this to the downtown commission and not objecting to it and not giving the other stakeholders the opportunity to really involve themselves in real solutions, instead leaving it up to police and merchant groups to make decisions.
What is it that makes you think that you would get or the people who oppose what we're doing would get anything out of a meeting in front of the downtown? I'm just curious, because this is an honest question. What would you get out of a meeting in front of the downtown commission except one more chance to sort of speak on this issue, be overwhelmed by the crowd that was in opposition
to
you?
Well, we saw what happened. The last time that Coonerty tried to ram through the parking lots and garages law in the winter of 2005-2006, it was pointed out, and it was also Mayor Matthews at that time, that this should go through the downtown commission. She probably reluctantly agreed. It got delayed for 6 months. The ACLU had time to weigh in on it. You had time to think about it. You actually voted for the parking garages, which I think was a mistake. Again, it's the same kind of thing, although there's a different quality to the garages than to the public sidewalks, but it's a similar kind of approach.
And the parking lots.
But it was about the garages. That was the section that passed. And the reason that the whole thing didn't pass when one fell swoop was because there was a longer period of time allowed for public discussion. It's not just us talking to the downtown commission. It's the community being advised of what's going on. And for you to claim a public process, which I criticize you for increasingly cutting short with your way of dealing with city council meetings, supporting this consent agenda ban where members of the public can't withdraw items from the consent agenda, and then previous shortenings of both oral communications and so forth. All right. So I've talked about that. Let me ask you a couple more questions.
I only have time for one more question.
Well, I better give Rick the opportunity to ask one more question. He's been sitting here patiently.
My question is, the people that are blocked by other people on the side, why don't they just walk around them? I'm thinking of my hometown in Greenwich, Connecticut. And there's a main avenue just like Pacific. It's called Greenwich Avenue. There's a lot of people standing around drinking coffee, you know, 5-6 people in a group. They could be older people. They could be younger people, people of all sorts. There's never been a problem about people obstructing sidewalks. If I encountered it or any of my friends, we just walked around them. You know, it seems like we don't like the type of people that are blocking the sidewalk, and we don't want to move for them. We just don't want them in our way. That's what comes to my mind.
Again, the listeners here probably should go judge for themselves whether the crowds that are gathering in certain parts of Pacific Avenue are in fact intimidating or whether going around them, whether the people that are feeling like they have to cross the street are just being too finicky and too whatever the word, what a proper word would be or something, or whether in fact there is an intimidating scene going on, particularly after dark, but as people point out in our council meeting, but even during the day sometimes, whether it's sort of really uncomfortable to try and walk around those folks without literally having to cross the street. And I don't think people should have to cross the street when they're walking, just regular folks should have to cross the street when they're walking downtown. People should judge that for themselves. Don't trust, my characterization of it or Robert's or yours. And my perception is that increasingly, those crowds are intimidating enough that regular folks are not going to want to walk down the sidewalk and walk around them. They're going to feel like that's not, and it's not because they just look, scary or something in terms of whatever, not only is the wrong word, but do they look like they're poor or that they're not like gainfully employed or something, but because they look like, gosh, I don't feel like it's safe to walk to get that close to those folks. And I think that's the problem that's going on. To what extent can we regulate the behavior down there such that everybody has a right to be there, and however they're dressed or whatever their economic situation, versus the question of whether they're creating a situation where other people literally feel uncomfortable. And the people that are writing us and calling us that feel uncomfortable are young UCSC students, people that work in the shops down there. They're 25 years old, 30 years old.
Give a breakdown of that. Like, how many people, how many students called you? How many people who identified themselves as younger?
I don't have a statistical breakdown, but I don't want to say honestly. I was impressed with what a high percentage of the people who wrote into us and stuff were not simply the business people that I expected would be complaining about this and who were no doubt organized by others to do it, but just folks that said, thank you for finally doing something. They would describe their lives some of these people work with the homeless folks. Some of these people work in social services, work with the mentally ill, and say, I'm not squeamish about dealing with people that are down and out or problematic, but that scene down there has gotten ugly, and we just got that was said over and over and over again in these letters.
It wasn't said at City Council, I noticed. There was no social service providers there other than Matt Nathanson, who essentially didn't like these ordinance changes. He was expressing concerns about it. You got to go. I want to respect that. I want to just clarify the kinds of questions I'd like to ask you at the next meeting so you won't be bushwhacked.
I'll listen to him, and then I have to go. But I won't respond now, but thank you for giving
sure.
me a heads up.
Sure.
I'll answer next time.
No. And it's not just that. These are questions I'd like to, that I think I wish you had time.
Also,
wish you had time
please,
to answer.
Please look at the comments I wrote on your leaflets here, where I think you're misstating the
about the metro issue.
Yeah, I think they're both about the metro issue.
Okay, and if there's some corrections that need to be made in these flyers, never is. Of course, I'm pretty much letter perfect about that. Tasering. I'd like to know, as a member of the Public Safety Committee, you have presumably oversight over tasering. We'd like to see copies of the guidelines for tasering used in Santa Cruz. How many times tasers were either used or drawn in the last 2 or 3 years? Has been a real concern about tasering as a lethal procedure. David Anthony Cross was tasered to death in the county jail 4 years ago, and I don't think anybody was ever held accountable for that.
Let me quickly say, I think tasers are a serious problem in many communities that don't have adequate guidelines, and there's people using these things in ways that are outrageous. I think the city of Santa Cruz has been pretty good about this. We train people well. Our whole city has 4 tasers. Most cities have, many cities give every officer
a
taser.
Wait a minute.
Our city has 4 tasers.
You should know that I received a report of 4 officers with tasers on the riverbank, standing around a man they'd thrown down, face down, from 2 different witnesses, threatening with 4 tasers. If one group of officers has 4 tasers, the city has more than 4 tasers.
They must have had the city's 4 tasers. I know that the city has 4 tasers, and that those tasers, every time those tasers are used, it's recorded, they're electronic. We know exactly every time a taser goes off in the city of Santa Cruz. We have exact records on them. I've reviewed every one of those records, and I think our police, and again,
Check it out.
It could never be an abuse, but basically,
I didn't want to draw you into it right now.
But we're working very hard on making sure that we don't misuse our tasers.
How many times have the tasers been used? How many times have they been displayed as a use of force? Can you get those stats for us in the last couple of years?
I don't know that we know every time they've been displayed. We know every time they've been.
No, please don't keep a record of that at the moment.
No,
you'll find that out there, perhaps. Okay, that's number one. Number two, UCSC Regents. This is an issue where actually you and I agree. We talked about this on the air, the issue of speech, the issue of these bizarre new regulations implemented by the Regents in September and used against 3 students to suspend them. I want to know what's happening up there on campus regarding that situation. And I'm not holding you accountable in any way except that...
Please don't, since I disagree.
Of course. You're an ally here, but you seem to use a different standard downtown. I'm not going to rag you about that one right now. ACLU. The ACLU has not been involved at all. I'm wondering, were they involved at all in any of the ordinances and looking into them? What local cases involving civil liberties has the local ACLU? You're still on the board, right?
Yes, I'm on the board.
You know, been involved in looking into. And also, is the ACLU at all concerned about issues like the sleeping ban, which, as you know, ACLUs in Los Angeles, Sacramento, Fresno, have been instrumental in forcing the cities to change their policies. One knows the local ACLU doesn't have a lot of legal resources, but you certainly have the power of the bully pulpit. I guess that's how they say it. So, I know you disagree on this issue. You think the sleeping ban is a fine thing in the sense that, you know, it's like dental care and everything else. If only things were better, if we had a socialist state, things would be different. But, in fact, now you've got to have laws that criminalize the people.